Welcome back to That Year in Media. I'm Anna.
I'm Logan.
And today we're talking about film. So basically made a list of important or big films for the year 1990. And we picked out a handful that we wanted to watch or that some of us have seen, some of us haven't. We know we aren't going to get to all of the films in the year 1990, but we kind of just tried to pick out the best ones or the most important.
Yeah, and any that we missed that we thought deserve some sort of shine, or some of them are personal favorites of mine that Anna doesn't care about, or a lot of people might not care about, so they're going to get honorable mentions at the end. So just going over, I mean, some big events happened in the year 1990 for film. CGI technique was expanded to use motion capture for the first time ever, and that was in Total Recall. And then also Buchwald versus Paramount, the legal case happened. Essentially, the writer for Coming to America sued the studio because he wasn't paid for the success of the film. They used Hollywood accounting to basically state the film was a loss on paper, and Paramount settled for $900 million outside of court, basically to not get Hollywood accounting exposed. So, pretty big case.
So yeah, we're starting with the film Goodfellas. So it's a crime film adaptation of the 1985 book Wise Guy by Nicholas Pileggi, who co-wrote the screenplay with Martin Scorsese, who also directed it. It stars Ray Liotta, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci. The film narrates the rise and fall of mob associate Henry Hill and his friends and family from 1955 to 1980. Goodfellas premiered on September 19th, 1990, and the budget was $25 million and grossed $46.8 million at the box office.
Yeah. The film was also nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director. Pesci actually won Best Supporting Actor, and it was named the year's best film by a lot of different critics groups. It's had a huge lasting legacy. It inspired director David Chase to go on and make the Sopranos series. That series would end up sharing 27 actors with the film Goodfellas. So neither of us had actually seen this before we did this, and we both loved it.
I think for you too, like, it was my favorite movie that we watched, but I'm pretty sure it was yours as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it just had the storyline was great. The acting was just spot on. Like,
it felt a lot more realistic than The Godfather. I mean, The Godfather is a classic crime drama, especially for the mafia. But it feels very, like, grand and dramatic and almost theatrical, whereas this is very tongue-in-cheek, realistic. I mean, people get shot for insulting people in it, like, at the drop of a hat.
I feel like it's a little bit more, like, lighthearted almost in a way than Godfather, even though there are some intense scenes.
Yeah, it's more tongue-in-cheek. It's playful almost.
Yes.
So, easily the best film of this year. I think most people would agree. It's lasted a lot more. It doesn't really match what it made in the box office, so.
Although that does bring us to our next movie, which was the top grossing movie of the year 1990, which was Ghost.
Yeah, so Ghost, I mean, most people should know it, but it was a drama romance written by Bruce Joel Rubin, directed by Jerry Zucker. Bruce Joel Rubin had actually wrote Jacob's Ladder, which came out the same year and we'll be talking about, and then the director formerly worked on Airplane. Very different worlds, very different styles, but they came together for this. So it stars Patrick Swayze, Demi Moore, and Whoopi Goldberg. Film just follows a man who basically gets killed in a street alley, and he becomes a ghost and just tries to prevent the woman he loves from getting killed as well. The film released July 13th, 1990. Critics gave mixed reviews, but I mean, it made an insane amount in the box office. Its budget was $22 million, and it earned $505 million during its theatrical run worldwide.
Kind of a fun little fact, the director, Jerry Zucker, said he did not want to cast Patrick Swayze as the main lead in this movie. But yeah.
Yeah, he went to the filming of Roadhouse and saw Swayze at work and just shook his head and was like, no, not this guy. It's not happening.
I like the movie, but it was just like, there were some parts that were kind of
corny.
Interesting. Yeah, corny, I guess.
Yeah. The beginning is awful. It's not interesting. It doesn't grip you. The middle gets good because at least Swayze and Whoopi Goldberg have a pretty good dynamic on screen.
Whoopi Goldberg honestly was my favorite part of the entire movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, the first 20-30 minutes, I honestly thought I was going to hate the whole movie, but it got a lot better throughout.
I like the subway hotel.
So, I mean, yeah, that was pretty good too.
Next, that actually brings us to Jacob's Ladder. Again, I mean, this is just a straight horror film written by the same writer as Ghost, Bruce Joel Rubin. If you watch Ghost, that subway ghost who's more spooky and scary and stuff is definitely all the writer's influence. So this film was directed by Adrian Lin, who would go on to do Fatal Attraction. It stars Tim Robbins, Elizabeth Pina, and Danny Aleo. The film is about a Vietnam vet who, after being injured, is sent back home. 4 years later, we get to see his mental state just rapidly decline. He keeps seeing the world and people around him shift into disturbing images. He keeps seeing tentacles, murdering people, other gross stuff like that. Budget's $25 million, ended up only grossing $26.1 million, so very narrowly was a success. Most critics panned it. They thought it was too dark, too disturbing, or just an interesting story that was kind of butchered and clumsily executed. The reason I wanted to talk about this is because it would go on to inspire Silent Hill, just specifically because of how it deals with the world kind of falling apart around this man. Like, throughout the film, we learn that it's basically just fragments of his life and memories he's holding on to getting torn away, and that's why the world keeps deteriorating around him. So, interesting movie, but not a huge success story.
Okay, so our next movie is a classic. Yeah. Home Alone, which I'm pretty sure almost everybody has seen, if not everybody. But basically, it's a Christmas comedy, if you haven't seen it. Production is by John Hughes. It's directed by Christopher Columbus. Okay, that is, I am reading this right. Christopher Columbus.
Yeah, different Christopher Columbus, obviously. You know, this guy knew he was in America.
But anyway, stars Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, and Daniel Stern. The film is about an 8-year-old boy who gets left home alone while his family goes away on a Christmas trip. He's loving the quality alone time until he realizes his house has become the focus of two robbers. So it was released on November 16th of 1990, and the budget was $18 million, and it grossed, get this, $476.7 million worldwide.
It was a huge hit, and it also didn't have that long of a runtime in the year. So, like, it came out in November. I mean, obviously, it was a Christmas film. You're not going to release it earlier than that. But it grossed an insane amount. It was actually the highest-grossing live-action comedy film until The Hangover Part 2 beat its record in 2011. So, for 21 years, it held that title. The film was technically made illegally. It violated a bunch of contracts. So originally it was produced by Warner Brothers, but they had a hard cutoff at a $10 million budget. While they were filming, as costs rise, they went behind the studio's back and made a deal with 20th Century Fox to pick it up if it gets cut for a higher budget. And this actually happened. Warner Brothers did cut it, but 20th Century Fox started producing it before what's known in the industry as turnaround time begins. Basically, there's a time period between a studio cutting it and another studio being able to pick it up. So, yeah, made illegally, huge success story. I'm sure Warner Brothers isn't happy about that. Another fun fact, Joe Pesci's nonsense words that are throughout the film of just shmurga-shmurga kind of junk is just because of how often he swore personally. And, I mean, he's coming right off the heels from Goodfellas, where he swears constantly. Both these fun facts come from The Movies That Made Us on Netflix, which definitely recommend. It goes over this very well.
Highly recommend. It's so good.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'd both seen this a lot, obviously. I mean, I think most people in America have seen it, especially our generation. Like,
it's such a good movie. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. And the sequels are okay too, but this one is special. It's the best Christmas movie.
Okay, well, our next movie is Dances with Wolves.
Yeah, so Dances with Wolves is actually my dad's favorite film. That's kind of the main reason I got put on here, because I have seen it, and it's not really up her alley. I wasn't going to force her to watch it.
Not about, like, Westerns, really.
Yeah, and if you watch the full version, it's 4 hours long.
Yeah, so
and you should watch the full version, because the hour that they cut for the theatrical release is still pretty good stuff. So it's a Western. It's directed, produced, and starring Kevin Costner as the lead role. A film adaptation of a book that came out in 1988, so pretty quick turnaround on that. The film is basically just about a Union soldier who leaves his former life of being a soldier behind to join up and become a member of a Lakota tribe that he fostered a relationship with. Budget of $15 million ended up grossing $424.4 million. Much of the dialogue is spoken in Lakota with English subtitles. It was a huge success.
The film had good reviews from critics and audiences. They praised Costner's directing, the performances, screenplay, production values. It was the fourth highest grossing film of 1990, and the film was nominated for 12 Academy Awards at the 63rd Academy Awards. It also won 7, including Best Picture, Best Director for Costner, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Film Editing, Best Cinematography, Best Original Score, and Best Sound Mixing. That is a lot of awards.
Yeah.
The film also won the Golden Globe Award for Best Motion Picture Drama. That is insane.
Yeah. Well, and part of its success, they actually had real Native Americans playing Native Americans. I mean, they were mostly Sioux members. They relearned the language of Lakota basically for the film. I mean, most tribes, the language is dead. They know bits and pieces, but they had an expert teach them again. I mean, it was Kevin Costner's first film as director. He ended up paying for a lot of production costs out of pocket. I mean, it obviously paid off. It made $400 million.
So our next movie is Back to the Future 3. It is a comedy sci-fi released May 25th, 1990, directed by Robert Zemeckis, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, and Mary Steenburgen. Stranded in 1955, Marty McFly learns about the death of Doc Brown in 1885 and must travel back in time to save him. With no fuel readily available for the DeLorean, the two must figure out how to escape the Old West before Emmett is murdered. And so the budget was $40 million, and it grossed $244 million.
So, fun fact, I mean, I'd always kind of wondered why it was Western-themed. It seemed like a kind of odd departure, but apparently, while filming the first film, the director asked Michael J. Fox what time period he'd like to see, and Michael J. Fox said he wanted to see the Old West and hang out with cowboys, and apparently that was a good enough reason to make it happen.
That's pretty good.
I think they had the first two planned and just kind of threw something in for the third one.
Yeah, probably. So I mean, it's worked out for him.
I guess. I mean, we've both seen it a lot. It's my least favorite by far.
Yeah, it's not my favorite one, but I mean, it's not bad.
It's not great. I like it. It's a good trilogy, but it's not the only trilogy to throw in a Western version. I mean, Tremors does that eventually, following in its footsteps, so it's a little cheesy, but...
Yeah. Okay, so our next movie is Crybaby. I had never... I think I might have heard of this movie at some point, but... I knew it starred Johnny Depp, but I was like, I've never seen this. Like, I love Johnny Depp. Like, what is this movie about?
Not Johnny Depp in real life. Johnny Depp on screen.
On screen. We should make that point. Anyway. Yeah. So it's a teen musical romantic comedy released April 6th. The writer and director, John Waters from Hairspray Studios, were actually in a bidding war over the film in pre-production. So it stars, as, of course, Johnny Depp and Amy Locane. So a prim and proper schoolgirl goes against her mother's wishes when she dates a motorcycle riding juvenile delinquent. So, okay, the budget was $12 million for this movie, and it grossed $8.2 million. So a pretty bad flop. And after watching it, I can see why. I watched the first, like, 20 minutes, maybe, and then I, like, skimmed through the rest. It was just... The lines were awful. The execution was just bad. Like, I cannot say really anything good about this movie.
Yeah, I didn't even watch it, but just, like, going through, I've been finding, like, good summarizations for each film, and I could only find, at most, a sentence for the whole film. Like, every other film on this list has, like, a paragraph or, like, two paragraphs for the summary. This one gets a sentence.
Okay, let's just move on to our next movie.
Yeah.
Another Johnny Depp movie, but a good one.
Sure.
Or should I say better?
Better, yeah, for sure. So it's Edward Scissorhands. I think most people have seen this. If you're of our generation, at least. I feel like everyone saw it. It's a fantasy-ish romance film. It was released December 14th in 1990, so just narrowly made it in for the year. Stars Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder as his co-star. The film's basically about an incomplete artificial man, a robot, which I've missed every time I've seen it, but hey, there's that. But he was basically left with scissors for hands after his inventor passed away while he was still being made. So he's basically lived in solitude all this time since then, until an Avon sales lady knocks on the door and finds him and brings him into society. He ends up falling in love and well, things just kind of go poorly from there. It had a budget of $20 million and ended up only grossing $86
million. So, a little fun fact. I feel like most people probably know this, but Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder were dating at the time of filming this movie. The lead role of Edward has been connected to several actors prior to Depp's casting. A meeting between Burton and the preferred choice of the studio, Tom Cruise, did not go well. And Tom Hanks and Gary Oldman turned down the part. So the character of the inventor was devised specifically for Vincent Price and would be his last major role. Both Burton and Elfman consider Edward Scissorhands their most personal and favorite work.
Just following up on that, I mean, Tim Burton's had a lot of hits or misses. I think taking this one as his favorite is fine. And digging into it, apparently he drew Edward Scissorhands when he was like 13 or 14 or something, and that's where this concept came from. Just some like edgy teenage drawing of his.
Like, it's such an odd, but like, there, I don't know, there's like little bits of humor, like when he's on the waterbed and he pops it with like his scissor hands.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, it mixes like sci-fi and comedy in like a fun way, I feel like, in some parts, but then it also has the emotion that draws you in.
Yeah, like soul-crushing despair.
I mean, there's some pretty sad parts, so...
Yeah, I mean, we'd both seen this before. We didn't end up rewatching it. It's nowhere to watch currently, which is weird. It's technically owned by Disney right now. I don't know why it's not on Disney Plus, but rereading through kind of the summary, I remembered why I never liked it as much as other people, even though I kind of like the vibe and like themes of it. And the casting's fine. It's because of how it ends. It just ends with he's still alive and his love interest just never visits him again, and she's telling her grandkids this. Like, it's not a very happy ending. Like, yeah, Edward's not dead, but he's a robot who's gonna live forever, and the only person he loved just never visits him. So
I mean, it does end pretty sad.
Yeah,
the rest of the movie is pretty good though. I mean, I sure. Still feel like it's a solid film.
It's worth watching.
Yeah, I would say definitely
that. Out of Tim Burton films, it's worth watching, and it's not the worst.
Yeah,
that'd be Caroline or Corpse Bride. But
anyway, our next movie is Joe Versus the Volcano, which I had never heard of, which I found to be really weird considering the cast is Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, because they are also in a couple other movies together that are very popular. So
we're good.
Yeah, so it's a rom-com written and directed by John Patrick Shanley, who also did Moonstruck. Joe finds out he is apparently dying in about a year, causing him to shake up his boring life and quit his job. Soon after, a rich old man approaches him, offers him a ton of money and a free vacation to a beautiful tropical island. The only catch is to appease the native god. He has to jump into the volcano on the island a few months from now. But it was released on March 9th of 1990, and the budget was $25 million and grossed $39.4 million. So it wasn't a flop, but it wasn't like great either in the box office.
Yeah, it was enough of a margin to be considered a success. Critics didn't hate it. They didn't love it either. But it ended up becoming a cult classic, which I don't understand completely. Weird fun fact, Meg Ryan plays all three important female characters that show up.
Yeah, kind of odd, but yeah. Odd choice there.
So we watched most of this. The first 10, maybe 15 minutes are awful. Everything is gray. Everything is filmed super gray. The camera work is shoddy. It looks bad, but then it just opens up, it becomes more colorful and stuff like that. So I think it was a directional choice to show his old boring life before he finds out he's dying, apparently. It wasn't great. It's not good.
Well, okay, so the acting was good.
Yeah, they do fine.
The storyline gets a little bit weird. I feel like it doesn't really... The storyline doesn't know where it's going, and it just keeps going in, like, this direction and this direction. And, like, the last, like, part of it, honestly, I skipped through because it was just getting weird.
Yeah, and I think at the time it would have been better, but like we've gotten more like zany, weird love story rom-coms now that are better written. So I mean, I guess I understand why people liked it at the time, but it doesn't really hold up that well.
Yeah, it's not awful, but considering it's starring Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, you expect a lot more.
Yeah, you definitely expect better.
Okay, so our next movie, I'm really excited about this. This was also one of my favorites that we watched for this year. I had never seen it before, but Pretty Woman.
I gotta agree with that. I mean, Pretty Woman is a rom-com. It's written by J.F. Lawton, who wouldn't go on to do much, but it was directed by Gary Marshall, who would go on to do both Princess Diary films. It stars Richard Gere and Julia Roberts as the two leads. Pear would also do Runaway Bride with Marshall as the director again later on. So it's basically about a very successful businessman who finds an escort while lost in L.A. seeking directions. He ends up picking her up just to get to where he's supposed to go. He ends up charmed by her and hires her for the night. They have a pretty pleasant evening and night, and in the next morning, talking to his lawyer about some important business meeting or something like that, and his lawyer suggests he should bring a date, so he ends up hiring her for an entire week to basically pose as his classy girlfriend. Film came out March 23rd, had a budget of $14 million and ended up grossing $463.4 million.
So this movie is definitely, like, even though I had not seen it personally, like, I know so many people that, like, this is their favorite movie, like, they love this movie. It's referenced in a ton of media and just things, but yeah.
Like The Office.
Right. Yeah. Originally meant as a dark cautionary tale, Vivian being addicted to drugs and Edward throwing her out of the car was kind of the original screen, like, write-up for the movie, so kind of glad that didn't happen, and they kind of went a more, like, lighthearted, like, fun rom-com way with the movie. Yeah. The film also shares many actors and actresses from The Princess Diaries, including a waiter who catches things flung by the lead woman and states it happens all the time. I also noticed this because I have seen The Princess Diaries many times. While watching it, I kept pointing out people that were in that movie.
Yeah, like every 5 minutes she'd be like, oh, that person's in The Princess Diaries too. And then, like, another person would show up and be like, them too.
Yeah.
So we eventually looked it up and we're like, okay, it shares a director, and yeah, he just loves certain cast members.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I honestly just also love Julia Roberts. Like, she's just a great actress. But yeah, it's definitely a rom-com worth watching.
It's good. It has sort of like the sad, like, oh, they're not going to work out moment, but it doesn't play it on for too long. I think it lasts like maybe like 10, 15 minutes. It's not like an entire hour of them splitting apart and hating each other or anything like that. So I always love that new rom-com.
I do, however, find it interesting that this movie is, like, so well-known with even, like, younger audiences, considering, like, I feel like the material itself is very, like, adult, and it is rated R.
Yeah, I had always thought, like, just from hearing the references and stuff, that people just assume she was a prostitute because of how she was dressed or how much money they thought she had. But no, like, she's just straight up a prostitute, and, like, it's pretty explicit. Her meeting with Richard Gere is pretty explicit. She's pretty all business about that.
Yeah.
But I get why. I'm just still surprised, like you are, that people didn't throw a fit about this in 1990.
Also, pretty sure it is every girl's dream to go on the shopping trip that she went on in the movie.
I think that's a large part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So our next movie is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
The good one.
It is a superhero film directed by Steve Barron, who also did Coneheads. It stars Judith Hogue, Elis Kotis, Corey Feldman. And the film is about four Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles who emerge from the shadows to protect New York City from a gang of criminal ninjas. The budget was $13.5 million and grossed $202 million.
Yeah, so, I mean, fun thing, I had never known this. I mean, I've grown up watching this a lot, but it was an indie film. It wasn't backed by a major studio, and it was actually it held the title for the highest grossing indie film until 1999's Blair Witch Project. Another fun fact, the voice actor for Splinter is Kevin Clash, who also puppets and voices Elmo. I mean dude's got range. I mean, good for him. But
it's been a while since I've seen this movie, but I'm not super into Ninja Turtles. I did like it, but it's not my top tier movies, you know?
I pushed hard to rewatch this. It's been a few years for me. I love this trilogy. Definitely when 2 and 3 come up, I'm making it. Especially 3 when they go back to, like, feudal Japan. Like, it's happening. I love these films. Like, they're the first good superhero films.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the... That is kind of...
Like, would you rather watch these or Green Lantern again? Like,
oh my gosh. These are way better. Don't even bring it up.
Yeah, they know their quality. So, I mean, that's the last movie on our official list. So now we're just get into honorable mentions. Arachnophobia, I've heard of it. I know my grandparents love it. I know it's got a pretty big cast list. It's not anywhere to watch, so it kind of got left behind. Die Hard 2, I've seen it. It's not the best Die Hard. Die Hard 1 is way better. And I think Die Hard 3 we're definitely going to cover because it's at least got Samuel Jackson as the co-star, which is just great.
I have only seen the first one, but eventually I feel like I need to go watch 2 and 3.
Not 2. You can skip 2.
Okay.
I mean, they're action film. It's not like you're going to miss a huge story.
Like plot. A plot line, it's, right?
They know what they are. Another film that sadly got left behind is The Hunt for Red October. I know it's got a great cast list. A lot of people like it a lot. Just like a good, solid war film. It doesn't seem to be anything special. I'm sure it's a great film. We've never seen it, though. It didn't break any records. It didn't do anything special, so it kind of just got left. Next one is Kindergarten Cop. I've seen this.
I have never seen it. It kind of looks a little bit like silly fun.
Yeah, it's the early prototype of, like, the pacifier. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger is taking care of kids. Like, it's stupid. It's not a good film, but it is, if you know what I mean. So that wasn't enough reason to put it on the actual list and go through and watch it again. Next one is Misery. Again, I've seen it. I think it's great. It's one of the few solid Stephen King adaptions on film. It's not necessarily a pleasant watch. Anna wasn't feeling it, and I don't think it's important enough to really force that, because it's not everyone's cup of tea. It is disturbing psycho horror, so.
Didn't really seem up my alley.
Yeah, no. But definitely recommend it. If you like spooky stuff, creepy stuff, or Stephen King, it's a really good adaption, and it'll never have a better cast, even if they remake it, so. All right, next on the list we've got Neverending Story 2. I remember seeing this, but I don't remember much of it. I love the first one. I think it's great, but the second one wasn't a huge success. I don't think most people remember it or specifically like it. So it just kind of got cut. Same thing kind of with Predator 2. I like the series. The second one's not great. Falls pretty much in the same category as Die Hard 2. It's not terrible, but it's not a good entry for the series as a whole.
I've never seen any, like, Neverending Story or Predator movies at all.
They're not huge movies. I'd recommend Aliens as a franchise over Predator. So, there's that. Next is RoboCop 2. I've seen it. It's cheesy. It's a cheesy action film. It's not great. I don't recommend it. If it's your cup of tea, you've already seen it and you already love it. And good for you. I mean, that's that. Next is Total Recall. I almost pushed for this one. I think it's a decent Arnold Schwarzenegger film. It's real sci-fi. A lot of it doesn't hold up, but at the time its special effects were really, really good. And it's considered a pretty good success, especially for Arnold Schwarzenegger's career. And then the last one is Tremors. I love Tremors. It's a good horror comedy mix, surprisingly. It's basically about these worm-like creatures that pop up from the ground and try to attack people. And it's Burt Reynolds. It's a great starring cast.
I feel like Burt Reynolds. You gotta be pretty good to mix comedy and horror, like, well.
Yeah, and it's got the best character ever, Burt. When the sequels pop up, I'm probably gonna go back through and we're probably gonna watch Tremors.
Okay.
I love it. It's probably cheesy and probably doesn't hold up as much as I remember, but it's good stuff, so.
Okay, well, anyway, thanks for listening to our film mentions for the year 1990, and our next episode should be on music and TV, so stay tuned for that.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys.